Testing 1, 2, 3.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Westminster Stories, a podcast hosted by The Form Media. I'm your host, Kayla Dixon, The Form's business director and social media coordinator.
And I'm Maddie Goddard, the video and podcast director. Westminster Stories is a podcast hosted by The Form to share student-created content from across campus.
The views and opinions expressed in Westminster Stories are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of The Form Media or Westminster University.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. Here today, we have our amazing group members. I'll let each of us introduce ourselves as we talk about the pressing matter of mental health among children. My name is Gentry, and I am a senior here at Westminster studying sociology.
Hey guys, my name's Emma Glenn, and I'm also a junior here at Westminster. I transferred from Salt Lake Community College to pursue my psychology degree and hopefully become a therapist.
Hi, my name is Kim Hendrickson, and I'm a sophomore. My major is undeclared, however, I'm planning on pursuing sociology.
Hi, my name is Kimber Cedarholm. I'm a freshman here at Westminster, and I am going into nursing.
Perfect, perfect. Now, today we're going to be talking about a very important topic, mental illness. Yay, so good. Very prevalent in all our lives, as I'm sure you all know. Now, I'm sure everyone has had experiences with mental illness, from family members who have mental illness to having it yourself. Depression and anxiety are very present in our lives. As college students, I know in our group, we probably experience depression and anxiety a lot. This world can be very anxiety-inducing. However, today we're not just talking about depression and anxiety in the ways we usually think of it. I feel like society usually thinks of mental illness in a way that it only affects young people or teenage angst, or it's a phase and it'll pass. However, as we will propose today, mental illness like anxiety and depression affect children too, and it may even be a long-term condition. Our aim is to inform listeners like you how mental illness forms in children versus adults, what it looks like for different communities, the heritability, what factors to look for so you can recognize mental illness in children, and why we don't talk about mental illness in children.
Thanks so much, Gentry. I think it would be beneficial to start this off with providing some resources that could be used for families looking for some support regarding mental health. So with that, Gentry, would you provide us some good, reliable sources these families could reach out to for help regarding mental health in children?
Yes, girl. Yes, totally. So UtahTSELF has loads of resources that can help your if your children are suffering with mental illness like depression, anxiety. So one of these that I find is really great is Help Me Grow, which you can find at helpmegrow.com, which is basically giving children essential support and basing that around their parents and what parents can do to support their children. And then the next is Baby Watch Early Intervention. So this is starting very young, and it's to encourage and enhance baby growth, and that includes the mental. And then there is Utah Association of Infant Mental Health, which focuses specifically on mental health and its disorders. And then there is the Child Mind Institute, which provides help for those with specific mental health disorders. Like these, they're all centered around early intervention and giving your children the best possible care. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Those are some great early intervention resources. I remember that as a teenager, I thought that children and adolescents didn't really suffer from mental illness the same way that adults do. But I think that this idea that I had surrounding mental illness in children was formed partly by, you know, the way that my own parents reacted to my emotional struggles and, you know, my sibling struggles.
Yes, no, totally. So we know that mental illness shows up in children, but what are the actual stats behind that? Do we know why they show up in children, and like how many kids is this affecting?
Yeah, so depression and anxiety are two of the most common mental health disorders in children. In an article, it states that about 7% of children ages 3 to 17 have anxiety and about 3% deal with depression.
How can we see this? Like, what are we looking for? What are the causes at home? Like, what's happening at school? What's going on?
There are tons of causes of depression and anxiety in children. There's a list of a couple causes of alcohol or drug use that would certainly be influenced by the family and what the family allows. environment, including family problems, just general abuse, obviously can lead to more depression, anxiety, living in that type of environment. Family history, others in the family have depression, so just simple genetics can have a big effect. The heritability rate for depression in children is around 40%, and the heritability rate for anxiety in children ranges from 30% to 50%.
No, I actually, like, got very similar numbers. Too true, and I can, like, see this in my own life with my family, but also according to Stanford, if you look at the heritability estimates, we can see that the heritability is around 40 to 50%, just like what you were saying, and it might even be higher for severe depression, so I totally agree with your stats. This could mean that in most cases of depression, around 50% of the cause is genetic, and around 50% is unrelated to genes, psychological or physical factors, so that's a lot. It's a bit of a roulette. Not sure what you'll get.
Yeah, and physical illness too, that is a big one. If you're not physically well, it's hard to mentally take on stressful life events. If you have a type of illness that can affect the person's ability to move and independence and can change the way they live and see themselves. These changes can be stressful and can cause certain amounts of anxiety and depression. It's crazy to me that these are just a few factors and there are way more than that.
No, totally. There are way more than that. And that's totally a lot to take in. And like behavioral issues, I'm sure that those have their complications as well.
For sure. There are behavioral problems at school that are certainly linked. Some of the specific symptoms to look for are changes in eating or sleeping habits, mood changes, low energy levels, and feelings of sadness and loneliness.
Okay, but what about child-centered play therapy and treatment specifically? Do those work, and is it helpful for children struggling with mental health?
Yes, exactly, Kim. I'm so glad you asked. So we actually have some really interesting numbers here on that. So as we know, children who are marginalized due to socioeconomic status, racial and ethnic identities are at an increased risk to experience depression and limited access to mental health care. Further previous research has shown it doesn't work that well, but in this study by Bergen and Ray in the Journal for Family and Child Studies that I'm pulling from, they're looking at child-centered play therapy and if it's actually effective. They essentially took 71 children from a Title I elementary school in the southwestern U.S. referred by school personnel for depressive symptoms. So they're taking depressed children and they're doing this study on them, and they're taking 49 males, 22 females, and they have a pretty wide range of races and ethnicities, with 14 African American, 3 Asian American, 15 biracial, 19 Caucasian, and 20 Latino children.
That's pretty even across the board in percentages.
Yes, I thought so as well. So this study, in my opinion, can be pretty trustworthy. And then the participants were then randomly assigned to 8 weeks of twice weekly CCPT therapy, which is child-centered play therapy, experimental groups, or on a waitlist control group. Results were that which improved for children who participated in the child-centered play therapy, they felt better and replied better on their mood and feelings questionnaire. Essentially, child play therapy is extremely effective and it's always an option even for those with low SES.
That's very interesting. Do you have any more details about the children that are marginalized?
So that article mentioned how it's unfair, and in this article by DeLuca, talks about these racial, ethnic, and minority groups, or REM groups. And what we can see is that there's a large amount of social influences on these children not getting the help they need. While this is in a broader context, and not just children, it still applies for children. REM youth may be hesitant to seek and engage in therapy services, as there's evidence that marginalized groups are underserved by current early stage psychosis prevention screening, so they don't get screened, they don't get intervention, and research efforts have also demonstrated that REM youths are less likely to visit specialized psychosis services compared with non-Hispanic white youth before their first presentation of psychosis, which shows that these kids just in general need more outreach. They also have more stressors than white children purely from societal pressures. So in general, marginalized groups do feel high amounts of stress and high amounts of depression and anxiety, but are less likely to get or search for treatment for it.
Even though it may seem like anxiety and depression is something that you can get rid of, there are lots of treatments that will help you, including counseling and medication.
But it's getting the right diagnoses and even getting attention on these poor kids that seems to be the trick. getting the dang word out there. And okay, so based on these stats, it does show that kids do have mental illness.
Yeah, not a lot of people know about it, but the stats point to the truth that it is prevalent in these kids.
So real, Kimber. Okay, so now that we know that it is prevalent in these kids, how does mental illness form in children versus adults?
In the psychiatric article, it talks about how while we think of mental illness starting in adulthood, in actuality, in another article it stated that more than half of all mental disorders in adulthood begin in childhood or adolescence. And while we might diagnose mental illness more in adulthood because we are able to understand their emotions better with anxiety and depression versus children with depression, children with depression can look different and feel different. In another article stated, children can develop the same mental conditions as adults, but their symptoms may be different. Depression in adults is characterized by feelings of sadness and despair, but depression in children is usually characterized by anger or irritability.
And I totally see that in my own life. Adults tend to get frustrated and tend to be less patient with children who are acting in certain ways when their actions could potentially be blamed on other situations, such as them being hungry. But Kimber, you're saying these are the beginning signs of mental health?
Yes, these are the beginning signs of mental illness.
Okay. So, Emma, you've done a deep dive into recognizing mental illnesses in children, like depression and anxiety. What should caregivers know about these disorders?
It's important for caregivers to know that children are not commonly thought of as a population that could suffer from anxiety and depression. Being aware of the biases against children is the first step towards increasing a caregiver's ability to recognize if they have a child with mental illness. According to the CDC, 9.4% of children ages 3 to 17 years old have diagnosed anxiety from 2016 to 2019. That's approximately 5.8 million children. In addition to this, 4.4% of children, which is approximately 2.7 million from the ages of 3 to 17 years, had been diagnosed with depression from 2016 to 2019, and this was from the CDC. The studies for this article showed that a significant portion of children struggle with anxiety and depression.
The CDC is such a great place to find info on this, and it's unfortunate that adults don't think children experience mental illness when the information implies different findings. How would caregivers identify anxiety disorders in children?
When it comes to anxiety in children, length and type of fear may indicate that the child is suffering from a disorder rather than, you know, developmentally normal fears. If a child has intense fear when away from their main caregiver, they could be dealing with separation anxiety, which is one of the listed anxiety types.
So separation anxiety isn't normal in children?
Actually, it can be. Children have a developmental stage where separation anxiety is normal, but this usually only lasts until they're about 3 years old. If the child you're caring for is older than three and still reporting intense anxiety when their guardian isn't present, then they could be suffering from a disorder. Additionally, it's important to note that you should always see a medical professional for a diagnosis.
Yes, no self-diagnoses here. And that totally makes more sense. Understanding the developmental stages of children is important for determining if a child's behavior is normal or not.
Yes, but there are more types of anxiety to look out for. This includes having extreme fears about a specific thing or situation, such as dogs, insects, or going to the doctor, which is also referred to as phobias. Another thing could be being very afraid of school and other places where there are people, and this is social anxiety in children. Another one is just being worried about the future and bad things happening in general, which is general anxiety.
Yeah, totally. Some of this is where I feel like misdiagnoses definitely come in, with people just thinking this is normal. Also, when it comes to general anxiety, what are the symptoms we can look for here?
Generalized anxiety disorder causes people to feel extremely worried or nervous with little or no reason. Symptoms can include having repeated episodes of sudden, unexpected, intense fear that come with symptoms like heart pounding, having trouble breathing, feeling dizzy, shaky, or sweaty. And this is also considered a panic disorder.
Ah, and that's just anxiety, right? What about depression?
It's also normal for children to experience sadness, but a depressive disorder may be present if the following conditions are met. So the first one is just feeling sad, hopeless, or irritable a lot of the time. Other symptoms are not wanting to do anything, or they don't enjoy things that are typically fun for them. They show changes in their eating patterns. Either they eat, you know, a lot more than usual or a lot less than usual. Showing changes in their sleep patterns. So again, sleeping a lot more or a lot less than usual. Showing changes in energy. So them being like extremely tired or sluggish or tense, or also on the other end, being restless and not being able to calm down.
No, I feel like we see this all the time. And I used to work at a preschool and I saw actually a lot of these things, and now I'm a little worried about it. And there's still so many more things.
Mm-hmm. There definitely are. Other symptoms of depression in children includes having a hard time paying attention, feeling worthless, useless, or guilty, or showing self-injury and self-destructive behavior.
Yes, that we definitely see that, I'm sure. And so that's a lot. So parents, check on your kids. And you found this on the CDC website, right?
Exactly. The CDC provides a lot of good information on depression and anxiety characteristics in children. After doing my research, I also ended up finding that the symptoms of anxiety and depression for children are very similar to the symptoms for adults. I found that children experience mental disorders in the same ways adults do, but they don't have the communication skills to explain their emotions the way an adult would. And in addition to this, caregivers tend to see problems from their own perspective rather than a child's, and this can lead to the adult determining basically that the children's problems are not that serious.
I can see what you mean, but more specifically, what do you mean by this?
Well, I'll give you an example. Let's say a child is bitten by a dog at a park. And it's bad enough, you know, that they had to go to the hospital, they had to get stitches, and, you know, do all these things that are hard for kids. After the event, the child may want to avoid parks because, you know, they associate that type of place with getting bit by a dog because that's where it happened. But, you know, an adult caregiver may see this and decide, you know, I'm going to take my child to the park where there aren't dogs, and, you know, they'll have a great time, it'll be fine. But once, you know, you're at the park, if a child shows anxiousness and doesn't want to get out of the car, the caregiver might think from their own perspective where, you know, they understand that this dog park is, you know, or sorry, yeah. This park is dog free and, you know, it's enforced and safe. However, the child doesn't have this, you know, knowledge and understanding of dog-free parks, so they could still, you know, be anxious by these things. But, you know, a parent might misinterpret that and say, you know, their child's being lazy, or they don't want to go outside and, you know, do the things that they need to do. Basically, just, you know, putting the wrong reasons for this child just, you know, not wanting to interact with the dog again.
Yeah, they would have a limited understanding. And I could definitely see how a change of perspective is necessary. So can you explain why children are less likely to be diagnosed with anxiety and depression? Like, why is this happening? Can you tell us about this European study that you found to help explain this to us?
So basically, there was a study on European children and adolescents, and it found that subjects reported similar barriers for getting help with their mental illnesses. This study was on a variety of mental illnesses, but it did include anxiety and depression. The first explanation for why children didn't get help with their mental illness was individual factors, and this was kind of a broad category that included a lot of reasons. So from the most common to least common, these reasons were a lack of knowledge about mental health and mental health services. This included not knowing who to talk to or if their problems were serious enough to get help. Broader perceptions about seeking help help for mental health was also a listed factor. And this is basically how getting help reflects on the child's character. So, you know, they might believe that if they, you know, need help with solving something, then they're weak.
Yes, that is a common perception. I feel like we just hear that everywhere, whether it's social media or in our own lives. I could totally see that as a real thing.
Mm-hmm. They also reported wanting to solve problems on their own. Children and adolescents that have the idea that they need to solve their mental health problems alone also had higher rates of depression and self-harm. So basically, to quote the article, this sub-theme was reported in nearly all studies that included young people with elevated levels of depression symptoms or experiences of self-harm, and mostly in quantitative studies with high rates of endorsement.
So children really shouldn't be expected to solve their own mental health struggles. Who would have thought?
Correct. Like, the last part of the sub-theme was that a portion of children and adolescents did not properly adhere to treatment plans or had reservations about attending appointments. Some of these reservations included doubt that the treatment was working. They felt that it wasn't their choice, like they were pressured by their teachers or parents. There was also a difficulty communicating that they needed help.
And those are real reservations, but we can't let that stop us from getting mental health treatments. And what's the next category that they focus on?
So the next category that they talked about was social factors, and this refers to the way in which children and adolescents have social barriers to getting help with their mental illness. It included feeling like there would be negative consequences, like embarrassment from their social groups, if they were to be diagnosed with a mental illness. Another but less common factor under this category was that children and adolescents felt like they would be taken away from their parents.
That is a bit frightening to think about. And so what would that third category then be?
The third category contributing to young people's reluctance to ask for help was relationship factors.
What does relationship factors mean?
So relationship factors refer to the relationship between the child that needs help and the professional helping them. To quote the study, young people reported that they are more likely to seek help if they feel respected, listened to, and not judged, and less likely if they feel like they're being judged or not taken seriously.
That's some totally interesting stuff. What's the last category?
The last category listed for why young people didn't get help was systemic and structural factors. And some of these reasons were not having enough time in their schedules, difficulty finding transportation, the professional availability was also limited.
That is totally true about professional availability. I don't know if anybody's tried to find a therapist, but it can be hard, and that is a very extensive list.
Yeah, it definitely is. In general, there are some identified risk factors for why young people themselves might not reach out, but this information is very important for caregivers. It can help them understand the perspective of the child or adolescent that they're caring for. And one of the reasons listed for young people, like, not getting help was that they feel judged. So, you know, caregivers understanding that would be able to have a better conversation and basically just make sure that they say things that don't end up making the child feel judged.
Yes, yeah, or make them feel worse overall. Well, thank you, Emma. It's crazy to think that this is why the children cannot get help.
Yeah, well, it makes sense that children would need a safe environment to open up about their emotional distress.
Yes, and I totally see that. Okay, so we have looked at how it shows up in children, looked at some of the stats, looked at the whys, the hows. Now let's get to the fun part, debunking these myths.
Okay, so at the Child Myth Institute, there are 7 myths stated quite a lot. This article provides many misconceptions that people have regarding mental health of children. One of the points that the article focuses on that I liked was the myth that a child can manage a psychiatric order through willpower.
Classic. You just hear this everywhere.
Everywhere. The article specifically says a disorder is not a mild anxiety or a dip in a mood. It is a severe distress and dysfunction that can affect all areas of a child's life. Kids don't have the skills and life experiences to manage conditions as overwhelming as depression, mm-hmm. anxiety, or ADHD. They can benefit profoundly from the right treatment plan, which usually includes a type of behavioral therapy, and have their health and happiness restored. The article also includes the myth that therapy for kids is a waste of time, which has also been proven to be false as well.
Yes, many times throughout this article, we could so see that's not true. And so why is therapy and play therapy so important? I know we touched on this a little more, but if you could give us a little bit more on that.
Yeah, so I've heard this a lot, and it is common for adults to not be concerned with a child's mental health, thinking that the child just needs to toughen up and that therapy is a waste of time and money. A lot of adults think that it's better to let them figure it out on their own than to get help.
No, I've totally heard this in my own life. And obviously this is untrue, as we have seen with play therapy and other words. And what works other than talk therapy?
So evidence-based treatment programs for children and teens use cognitive behavioral therapy, which focuses on changing the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that are causing them serious problems. And research has shown that recognizing the symptoms early on and diagnosing them is what's most important for these children.
So what it was a big portion it focused on, or the thing you liked?
What I liked most about this article was that it focused on how children don't just grow out of their mental health issues. The text specifically says they more grow into them. The article also says most mental health problems left untreated in childhood become more difficult to treat in adulthood. So it's better to acknowledge these children who are struggling when they are young and to get them the help and resources that they need so that they can help themselves when navigating future complexities of life.
What a quote. So both you and Kimber mentioned that treating in childhood is absolutely the way to go. So we have totally established that. And we can certainly see how it's more prevalent, and especially that myth about how they blame ADHD or other behavioral or so-called issues. Like with ADHD, this is classic. We see this a lot.
Absolutely. And treating mental health issues in children is in the childhood is crucial because it can set the stage for a healthier, more fulfilling life. The myth about blaming behavioral issues like ADHD on children is unfortunately all too common. This misperception can delay essential treatment and support, making it even more vital for us to challenge these misconceptions and promote awareness. And it's through conversations like these that we can work together to shift the narrative and create a more empathetic and informed approach to children's mental health.
Yeah, totally, totally. And unfortunately, everyone, that wraps up our podcast for today. So remember to talk to your children, treat them like humans, maybe see from their perspective, who knows. And once again, thank you to everyone listening in. And remember, all health issues aren't just for adults. Thank you.